topic for today that I thought would be interesting and relevant is Tzar Bali Chaim, which means the prohibition against cruelty against animals. How do we treat animals? And I'd like to connect it to this week's parasha because the Torah describes Esav as an Ish Tzayit. And Seder, which is hunting, is not such a simple matter in halacha. What I mean to say is that if a person is, as we'll soon see, simply interested in the sport of killing animals, that's good for Esav, but it's not good for Yaakov. So we're representing Yaakov today. And Yaakov is described as the Ish Tam Yoshev O'alim, and he's certainly not the Ish Tzayit. And what I hope to get to today, Mimir Tzashem, it's a little bit later on, is a tshuva from the Nod of Yehuda. I've mentioned many times the Nod of Yehuda. He was the great chief rabbi of Prague. And he's not a great advocate of hunting. So if we have any hunters here in the audience, you might want to leave now and mutav shiv shogigin, you know, better than to hear our opposition against that kind of sport. In any event, we could talk about taking animals' lives for the sake of some sort of constructive purpose. I mean, obviously the most common one would be eating. And even in that context, you know, the Torah's hashkafa is somewhat complicated because up until the Teva of Noach, we were enjoined from eating any animals. We were only allowed to eat vegetables. We were all vegetarians. So there does seem to be in the halakha an ambivalent attitude towards taking the life of animals in general. But certainly after Tevas Noach, it's mutter to take the life of the animal, but the question is for what purpose? And those are some of the issues that we want to cover today. Number one, am I allowed to cause an animal to suffer? Number two, what constitutes suffering? Number three, is it an Isur Torah to cause an animal to suffer, or is it only a rabbinic Isur? Am I allowed to ask a non-Jew to do it for me on my behalf? That's called in halacha amir liyakum. And in general, do I have to prevent an animal from suffering? If let's say I see an animal suffering, I wasn't the cause, do I have to bekum vaseh, actively try to stop the situation and prevent the animal from suffering? So a lot of these issues really hinge on the main question, and that is whether Tzar Bali Chaim d'oraita or d'rabbanan. So this is a machlokes tanoim, and you'll see that on your first page in the paragraph that starts Nechluku tanoim, which is the third paragraph, and it appears in two different sugyot and shas. The first sugya is in Perek Elu Mitziot, which is a very famous chapter in Bava Metzia. And there, Rava makes a statement that everybody agrees that Tzar Bali Chaim Do'orait. That's Rava's statement. The Gemara is not happy with Rava because the Gemara quotes from Yossi Aglili, and therefore there is at least one Tana, maybe even more, who holds that Tzar Bali Chaim is only D'Rabbanan. And we're going to see that this controversies has ripple effects straight through the poskim, even to the contemporary poskim today. What is the nature of the sugya in Bav Metzia Lamed Bet? What is the subject? We have a mitzvah called prika, which means the Torah tells us that if we see an animal and a man is, let's say, puts his burden on the animal, right? They didn't have trucks like we have today. And he's leading the animal, and at some point he has to take the burden off the back of the animal. And you can imagine that there are two dimensions to this mitzvah. Number one, the person himself has trouble getting a very heavy weight off the animal, so that's one thing you want to help him with. And indeed, from that context, we have an additional mitzvah called ti'ina to help him get the burden up on top of the animal, because it's a very heavy burden. But clearly in the case of ti'ina, we don't have any issue of sarba, of relieving the animal from its suffering. But in the case of prika, we may have an additional element, and that is the animal. So Rava says that prika teaches me two things. It teaches me that I have to help the person who owns the animal, or if he's the worker who's working with the animal, and at the same time it teaches me that I have to relieve the animal of its suffering.
In the teina, do I have to, like, what if it's a lot? Like, what if I'm helping him put so much that it's going to hurt the animal?
Excellent question. So that'll depend upon this discussion that we have today. But one thing is clear, that from the mitzvah of Te'ino, which commands you to help him out, to put the burden on top of the back of the animal, that would not be tsar balichaim. If anything, it could be the opposite. It could be cruelty to animals. But it's certainly not a mitzvah that I have to prevent tsar balichaim. Te'ino means I have to help the man. But in the case of prika, there may be an additional dimension that we derive from this mitzvah of prika, and it's an essential part of the mitzvah of prika, that not only am I helping the owner, the bialim, I'm also helping the animal itself, or herself, whichever way you want to say it. And Rava says that everybody agrees that prika has the second dimension to it of relieving the animal of its suffering. But the Gemara rejects Rava, because Rava went too far, and he said that everyone, you know, there's no issue, it's universally accepted. And in fact, the Gemara establishes, based on a braita, that Rabbi Yossi HaGlili holds that Tsar Bali Chaim is not essential to the mitzvah of prika. It's a derabbanan. It's only a rabbinic institution. Why the Rabbanan instituted this is something that we'll have to try to investigate as we go along. But the point is that this sugya in Shabbos, in Bav Metzia, therefore becomes questionable. We walk away with the sugya sort of with an open-ended question. We have two opinions, and it's not clear how the halacha. But there's another source that's very important in Shas. That's in Masechta Shabbos, and a similar sugya is in Masechta Beitza. And there the Gemara talks about a case on Shabbos or on Yom Tov where an animal fell into a bar. And the animal is suffering. And there are two scenarios. One scenario is which we could at least feed the animal on Shabbos or on Yom Tov by lowering food to the bottom of the bar. So at least in the minimal sense, the animal is eating. It's not dying of starvation. And in that case, the Gemara says the life of the animal is not endangered. And then there's another situation in which we can't even feed the animal. It's just impossible to get the food down. Now, the first question we want to ask ourselves is, can we haul up the animal? And the answer to that is no, but maybe so. What do I mean? No means we can't directly pull the animal up, because that's a violation of the Isur Mukta. An animal is called Mukta on Shabbos. There may be rare exceptions to the rule, but generally speaking, a work animal is Mukta. But what we could theoretically do is we can lower karim uksutot, you know, certain quilts or pillows or so forth, and then have the animal jump onto the quilts and then lift up the quilts. So that's an indirect kind of movement of mukta, and the halach is much more lenient in that case. Again, I'm not paskining, but there are this a lot more maneuverability and room to be liberal in the case of karim uksutot. And the Gemara basically says that even in the case of karim uksutot, even if we haul up the animal indirectly, although we're not violating mukta in the strict sense, but we are violating a lower case derabbanan, which is called mevatel kli mehechana. Meaning, I cannot take on Shabbos something that is not mukta, it's a kli, it's a utensil, and convert it into mukta. I'm not allowed to do that. And here, in effect, by putting the karim uksutot under the animal in order to haul it up, I'm being mevatel kli mehechano, because now that the animal is sitting on top of these pillows, the pillows become something which is called a bosis, and therefore they lose their status of hachon. But the Gemara says, nevertheless, you're allowed to do this. And why are you allowed to do this? Because of tsar balechayim. And this you'll see quoted in the paragraph that starts Ulam, which says that the Gemara indicates that Tsar Bali Chaim is a Torah prohibition. And since Mevatel Kli Mehechano is only rabbinic, we're going to overlook, or shall we say, trump the Iser Drabanan, the rabbinic Iser of Mevatel Kli Mehechano, for the sake of preventing Tsar Bali Chaim to get the animal up from the bottom of the bar. And in that case, we forfeit the Drabanan for the sake of the Dorite. But clearly the Gemara has no hesitations, as it did in the first sugya that we saw in Bav Metzia, and the premise of the Gemara is that Tsar Bali Chaim is Dorite. It's a Torah prohibition. Rashi looks for a source in the Torah for this prohibition, and Rashi finds it, as you could already guess, in the mitzvah of Prika, that we have to alleviate the animal of this very heavy burden, and the object of this mitzvah is not just to help the Bailim, so he could take his schora, you know, and sell it in the market, but also to help alleviate the animal of its suffering. However, the Rambam in the Mora Nevuchim says that the source in the Torah for the Iser of Tsar Bali Chaim is Bilam's donkey. In other words, when the Pasuk says that the God opened up the mouth of the mule and the donkey said, Al mahi kita zeshalsh pamim, why did you hit me three times?
Malach says.
What do you say?
Malach says it three
times. Who says it?
The Malach tells him why did you
hit me. Oh, the Malach tells him. You're right. I'm sorry. That itself is an indication that Bilam violated some sort of prohibition by causing pain to his trusty animal. In any event, how do we paskin? Because there are going to be a lot of issues that hinge on whether Tsar Bali Chaim is Doraita or not. So it's interesting. The Rif, the Rush, and the Shulchan Aruch following Bikvoteihem all paskin that Tsar Bali Chaim is Doraita based on the conclusion of the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat. Whereas the Rambam is unclear. 99 out of 100 cases, the Rambam accepts the Rif. So we have a very strong inclination to assume that the Rambam also is on board, that Tsar Bali Chaim is Doraita. However, you'll see on the top of page 2 that the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon in Choshen Mishpat, Simon, Reish Ayin Bet, vacillates back and forth, because there are different sources in the Rambam. The Rambam seems to actually contradict himself. Very difficult to figure out whether the Rambam is on board, and he also holds that Tsar Bali Chaim is Doraita. As we said before, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that Tsar Bali Chaim is Doraita, and the Mefarshim are very serious, therefore, the Poskim are very serious about Tsar Bali Chaim. The Minchas Chinuch has a very interesting chidush here. He says that if Tsar Bali Chaim is Doraita, what the Torah is objecting to is the situation in which an animal is suffering. That itself is unacceptable. And therefore, says the Minchas Chinuch, if I can do anything to alleviate the animal of its suffering, I'm obligated to do so. See, if the Rabbanan instituted Tsar Bali Chaim, so the Minchas Chinuch says they did it in a very lenient way. And they said, let's limit it. If you cause the animal suffering, you violate this prohibition. But they didn't say that I have to jump in seven salts in the air in order to save and alleviate an animal of its suffering. But if the Torah doesn't accept Tsar Bali Chaim, the Torah finds that objectionable, the Torah sees all its creations and wants to guarantee that there's rachmim, that there's compassion on all its creations, then I have to do whatever I can to alleviate the animal of its suffering. You see that on the second line on page 2. Chova aleinu limnoa tsar bali chayim. And therefore, on the third line, mechuyav hadam latzil bali chayim afilu mitzar haba mimela. So the animal never stepped on a nail or something. It's got a nail in its foot. So I got to rush it to the veterinarian, or if I could do something else to it. Even though I was not the cause of that suffering. I just cannot sit by idly and tolerate its suffering. Wait a minute, before you attack me, I just want to know, is that what it says? Before you attack me, I just want to say, do the words bear me out? The words of the Minchas Chinuch. The quote of the Minchas Chinuch is, "Mechuyav ha'adam latzil balechaim afilu mitzar haba memela." I emphasize the word memela. Aval aman the omer tzar balechaim derabanan is rabanan lo gazu el lesar tzar shegorein biyodav lebalechaim. He's prohibited from causing anguish to the animal, but velo, he's not responsible for tzar haba memela. I think I'm reading it right. Okay, go ahead.
Like if hunting, like a lion's hunting, whatever, like that.
Do I have
a gazelle?
Do I have to save one animal for another animal?
Yeah.
That I don't think. I'll tell you why. Because the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world in such a way that every animal would have its, parnasah, would have its
sustaining.
It's sustaining, right, to sustain the animal. So I don't know if I have to interfere with that. But assuming the animal is suffering and I can alleviate of its suffering, if the Minchas Chinuch is correct, and again, I think it's a big chiddush, I would have to actually do what I can, lahatzil and v'limnoa tzar balichayim. And again, the Minchas Chinuch says this only according to those poskim who accept that tzar balichayim is doraita. But as we've already seen, most of the poskim seem to accept that principle. And it takes us all the way to the Shulchan Aruch.
Shiloh HaKen is not the source of Tzar Balechayim?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Shiloh HaKen is really an exception to the rule of Asur Balechayim. Because what the Torah allows you to do in the case of Shiloh HaKen is to send away the mother and take the fledglings.
So she won't see her kids
being in front of her eyes. So it's sort of like on the gvul, if you follow me. It's on the one hand, the Torah is saying you're allowed to send away the mother bird and take its fledglings, but we want to limit the suffering of the mother so she shouldn't see it.
But diminishing the tsar doesn't mean that you're saving it. No, it could mean that you're just killing it, like Lagam right now.
Wait a minute. What we're about to study, Aaron, I don't know if this is your question, is whether killing an animal is a violation of Tzar Balechem. Is that your question?
Or no.
Because that's an issue that we're going to get to.
No, so. I'm asking, the animal is in pain.
Right.
So you can either help it by trying to treat it medically, or help it by just ending the pain.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So hold on to that. Yeah, that's all coming up if we have the time. But I wanted to go keseder here through this article because he quotes a number of poskim that are fascinating. He wants to know in the Prima Gadim, it's one of the great, great Ashkenazi poskim, wants to know, am I permitted to tell a non-Jew, which is called Amir al-Nachri, to cause tsar to an animal? In other words, if there's a certain situation where I gain something from the animal's suffering, can I, if I can't do it myself, can I have someone else do it for me? Mm. And the Prima Gadim says the following. It's contingent on whether the Isur Tzar Balechayim is Doraita or Derabanan. Because we have a principle called Shvut to Shvut. In other words, we don't add one extension, one Derabanan, onto another Derabanan. So if Tzar Balechayim is only Derabanan to begin with, then to go another step and prohibit telling a guy, which is Amir Lachem Shvut, that's already called Shvut to Shvut, and that would be permissible. But if on the other hand, I maintain that Isur Tzar Balechayim is Doraita, then the Shvut, the universal Shvut that says that what you can't do yourself, you can't tell a guy to do for you. And with the classical case on Shabbos, I can't violate Shabbos, I can't have the guy violate Shabbos for me. That should apply here in the case of Tzar Balechayim. And if Tzar Balechayim is Doraita, you can't tell a guy. I'm sorry, what were you saying? So you can't tell a guy. So we have to be very careful here if you assume that Tzar Balechayim is Doraita. Then the Prima Gadim makes an about face and he says, even if I grant you that Tzar Balechayim is Doraita, there still should be a permissibility of Amir Lagoy. And he says the following. That we divide up all of halacha into two categories. This is what's called an essay and a lotase. A positive command and a prohibition. He says the following. When you're in the losase mode of a prohibition, then amir le'akum shvus kicks in. But when you're in an essay is always one step lower. This we discussed in our makashir on last Wednesday, that if you have an essay, chayve essay, that's already a secondary kind of isur in comparison to the main primary isur, which is a lotase. And we don't find amir la'akum in terms of chayve essay, in terms of violating an essay. Therefore, even if I grant you that Tzar Balei Chaim is d'oraita, argues the Prima Gadim, but it would not engender the halacha, the rule of Amir Lakum Shvus, because Amir Lakum Shvus only applies to a lota said d'oraita. The classic case again is Chilul Shabbat. So I can't have the guy cook for me on Shabbos or plant in my fields for Shabbos because I would be violating a lota said kol malacha. But the Prima Gadda maintains that even if Tzar Balei Chaim is d'oraita, I grant you it's a Torah law, but it's not a lotase, it's an essay. An essay means to engender within you and exhibit a positive feeling towards the animal. A caring and a compassion towards the animal, not to cause the animal suffering. Now, I just want to make one comment. This is counterintuitive. I would have said that Tzar Balei Chaim is an Isur. If I would formulate it, it would be you're not allowed to cause the animal any suffering. He assumes no. It's a positive mitzvah to respect the animals, to care for the animals, and have compassion on the animals. It's not a lotasa. And I think that the answer to this riddle, why the Prima Gadim is absolutely convinced that there's no lotasa here, is because the Gemara tells us in Masech de Makis that in order to have a lotase, you need what's called an azhara. An azhara means the Torah has to warn you not to do it. If the Torah doesn't legislate, do not do X, then you don't have a lotase. And do not could be pen, hishamer, lo, there are many different languages. None of those appear with regard to Tzar Balei Chaim. If you take Rashi's approach, Tzar Balei Chaim is derived from what? We haven't forgotten yet, I hope.
From Prika,
which is a mitzvah essay. So if the source for Tzar Balei Chaim is Prika, then we're dealing with an essay. We're not dealing with a losas. And Amir Liakov, he says, doesn't apply with regard to an essay. I mean, that requires a lot of research, but let's grant him the authority to say so. So again, I'm not going to tell you that we the halacha advocates, if you have to benefit by causing an animal pain, go send a guy to do it for you. Yeah, I'm not saying we advocate that, but that would certainly, in cases of need, would certainly reduce the ease. For example, we're going to see that in certain health issues, we have what's called experiments, right? That's the bottom of your page 2 of Nisayon, of Nisui, excuse me, Nisui Rifui. And there again, animals will suffer, but if it's a non-Jew who's doing it, we begin to put, we could begin to piece things together here. We have a pressing need to unfortunately cause pain to the animal. And not only that, but if it's only an essay, then Amir Liakim Shvus doesn't kick in. So you follow what I'm saying? That the halacha wants to juggle many different factors and see if it can combine them. Those are called snifim, different branches, so to speak, and bring them together. So in the next paragraph, he quotes the Nebuki Yosef, who says that the Iser of Tzar Balei Chaim d'oraita, even if I grant you it's d'oraita, only applies b'tzar gadol, but not tzar mu'at. Now, this is very vague, and ambiguous. How do you, if I step on an animal's toe, that's tzar mu'at. But if I, if I flagellate it, what?
Step on two toes.
Step on two toes, it becomes tzar gadol.
On each foot, yeah.
Right.
Is there anything hurting an animal and torturing an animal?
Right. The example, he says, is that if the animal falls in the bar, Remember that case that we had on Shabbos and Yom Tov? And you can feed the animal by lowering food to the bottom of the bar and postpone lifting up the animal until after Shabbat, after Yom Tov, so that you don't violate the Isur Muktzah. So he says that the animals, even though it's uncomfortable for the animal to be stuck on the bottom of the pit, but that he calls tsar mu'at, as opposed to an animal that's starving and has no access to food without parnassah, that he calls tsar gadol. So again, I can't tell you that I have a clear-cut understanding of where is the boundary line between
comfort versus like pain.
Well, again, you know, even in this context, Aaron, I think even discomfiture, if there's such a word in English, is considered tsar in his language. So he calls tsar mu'at. So the Nebuki Yosef is allowing you, you know, to look the other way with regard to tsar mu'at, but if the animal is starving, then it's called tsar gadol. The Ramah writes, okay, well let's gradually lead up to the Ramah. The Gemara says that you're allowed to castrate a tarnagolet. You know, somehow when you're raising chickens, at some point, anybody here know anything about chicken farms and stuff like that? Anyway, at some point they do what's called cirrus. Now, cirrus is generally prohibited. It's a lav d'oraisa, to be misaris, a human being or an animal. But there are cases where you do it, what's called biderech akifa. In other words, you give the animal a certain drug and you generate cirrus. And that case would be mutter as far as the Isur cirrus is concerned, because you didn't do it the normal way. But the animal will suffer. So would this chicken farmer, if that's the right term, be allowed to do so? And it's very interesting. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Yochanan: "Harot says she yisareis tarnagol yitol karboloso umistaris me'ela." You take out, how do you call it in English? The karbolet. What's, you know, that red piece on top of the chicken? I forgot what it's called in English. Anyway, you remove that, and what's it called? The crown?
Comb.
The cone?
Comb.
Comb. C-O-M-B. Or maybe you remove that comb, and it becomes misuras me'ela. Now wait a second. Why is Rabbi Yochanan allowing me to do so? If Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell me that it's not in violation of Sirus because it's Ba'akifa, it's not direct, fine, so you should have told me that. But he uses the word mutar, and when I read the word mutar, I get the impression that he is advocating that I do this process. Why isn't it a problem of Tsar Balei Chayim? Very strange. So the poskim are going to build a lot on this statement of Rabbi Yochanan. They're going to assume that if it's done within the context of a normal, you know, farmer, you know, if the farmer needs to do this, again, I'm not an expert in raising chickens, but sometimes you have to do this process, then there's no Isur. And therefore, b'makom she'tzorech kalkali, she'tzorech kalkali, there's a financial need to cause an animal suffering, is ein bazeiser of tzar bali chayim. And the Mishnah says, for example, there's certain animals you're not allowed to sell to a non-Jew because you know that these animals will be used as part of their avodah zarah process. That's a Mishnah in avodah zarah in Yud Gimel, I think. And the Gemara says there that if you cut into the animal, you make a blemish in the animal, then you're allowed to sell it to a goy. So imagine I'm an animal seller. That's how I make my parnassah. And I got to sell to goyim. You know, there are a limited number of Jews out there in the marketplace. But the goyim, I'm not allowed to sell to because of avodah zarah. They might use it for avodah zarah. So the answer is you put a mum, a blemish in the animal. So the post can say, all right, you put a blemish in the animal, you circumvented the Isur of avodah zarah, but you didn't circumvent the Isur of tzar balei chayim. And once again, they want to say that mishum tzar kalkali, it's not an Isur of tzar balei chayim. That's what we're doing now, is we're balancing between the needs of man and the compassion towards the animal. And we're saying that the Torah is only asking you to be compassionate towards the animal in the absence of any other factor. But if there's a factor here, what we call a tzorech, then the Torah sort of, you know, weighs in favor of the human being and his needs. And that's exactly how the Shulchan Aruch paskins.
But what happens with the lo tachsom shor b'disho, that's like preventing him from eating?
Ooh, that's an excellent question. Why isn't that the source for tzar bali chayim? That's an excellent question.
Specifically in this case.
Shor b'disho.
Maybe because only b'disho you can, but not b'disho you can bring chosen him, so it's like...
Say it one more time, I didn't hear what you said. Maybe that you're not you.
Maybe because you are allowed to be chosim him if he's not doing the disha. So that like says, well, you can actually do tzar bali chayim, but to a certain extent. So.
No, I have to show him Shayla Kheret. Oish Makali, Sur Tsar Bali Chaim. Lama Shavalno Tarosh, Kede Lam Sipo, and Zoys Makala, Isu, the Kova would so big, the Fugash.
But אם זה, אם הסיבה שלא תחסום שור בדישו היה בגלל צער בעלי חיים,
כן.
אז האיסור היה לא רק בזמן דישו.
לא, בזמן דישה, אז יש... לא, כי בזמן דישה, הבהמה קשורה לדישה, אז היא רוצה לאכול. אז יש הצער, תוספת צער באותו זמן.
כן, אז אפשר ללמוד רק תוספת צער, יש ללמוד צער.
כן. אבל למעשה הוא צודק שאסור לגרום צער לבהמה. אם תשאל אותי מאין פה באיסור הזה, אני חושב שרמוז פה או מונח פה עצם הדבר שאסור לגרום צער.
אם היה אסור,
so that's a good point. I have to get back to you on that. I don't know the answer. He does not quote that as a source, so there must be some reason for it. I'm not a bucky in the Easter of Lotachsom, so I, all right. So anyway, so what is this? How does this kick in as far as using animals for experiments when the knowledge that we gain from the animal could help us in refuah? And the Trumas HaDeshen here, quoted by the Ramah, says, Kol davar tzarich refuah, lirfuah, v'shar dvarim, let they mishu misur tzar bali chayim. And here we have a fascinating conclusion. Lachen mutar, this is really far-reaching. Mutar limrot notzot me avazot chayot. And you're talking about live ducks, I think. Avaz is a duck in English.
Goose.
A goose, a duck, okay. And you're ripping off feathers from this goose. That's pretty painful, I would assume. I mean, I'm not a dog, but...
While
it's alive? It's alive. It says
why
chayot.
Why is he doing it?
He's doing it for... He needs the feathers for a fool.
Refuah.
Right. But I'm just saying, it's really interesting because for the sake of refuah, you know, you're allowed to cause such pain to the animal. And therefore, just give me one more minute, on the bottom of page 2, he says that trufot rabot hitgalu b'mirutzat hashanim al yidei nisuyim b'bali chayim. Many, many of these medical breakthroughs, even in psychology and so forth, they base it on animals. They do experiments with animals. You know, you're not going to, you know, let's say you find a drug that you want, but you first test it out with an animal to see if the animal dies. They usually use rats and things of that to it, right? So he's saying that even though the animal is going to suffer, and here he quotes the Shut Yaakov and the Sridei Eish, who writes that Ein atzar domel letzar shel meritat notzot, shu tzar gadol hamurgash b'chol notza u notza, u'mikan snif nosaf l'kula. So again, we're getting into this whole discussion here about what's tzar gadol and what's tzar muat. You know, how much suffering is considered suffering? And he says that miritat hanotzot, which I also thought was pretty painful for the animal, and yet we saw that the plucking the feathers, that we saw the Trumat HaDeshen allows it if there's some need for it.
I'm sorry, I missed. Where did we see a difference between if it's
That was at page one. If you have page one, take a look at the third paragraph, I think it was. Let me just double check that. I don't know. Does anybody remember which paragraph it was? I thought it was the third one. Oh, maybe it's on the second. Oh.
Right before the second part starts.
Okay. Mm. Page two. And one second, the Prima Gadim was talking about the East. Oh, yeah, after the Prima Gadim. Mukhi Yosef. Yeah, so you see the last paragraph that starts with Chashuv Litzayen before we get to the new section. And there he says that there's a difference between Tsar Gadol and Tsar Muat. Okay, let's go on to page three. If it's okay with you, we have about 10 minutes left and I want to see what we can get. And that is the case of hunting animals. And hunting animals is a tshuva of the Nodav Yehuda. Nodav Yehuda from Prague, one of the greatest poskim that we had in the Ashkenazic world in the last three centuries. He says that the issue here hinges on whether or not it's called litzorech. Is that called litzorech because you decide that you get sport, you know, you enjoy killing animals? And he says that this kind of hunting is very common amongst the rich people. You know, this I only know from art. You know, if you look at there, especially in England, you know, British art, you'll always see that the prince, you know, and he's got this dog and he goes out hunting and all this stuff. He says that since it's makom tzorach adam, and he quotes the Trumat HaDeshen that we saw before, that kol davar shu litzorach let be mishum isur bal tzar balichayim, he says maaseh hatzayid ein bo chashash leisur tzar balichayim. So he seems to be, again, don't be fooled, that's only in his first paragraph, but as an opening in his presentation, he says that lahamit behemot v'chayot v'chol b'nei balichayim let be mishum tsar balichayim. So now he introduces another element into the equation. He wants to say that tsar balichayim is not when you kill the animal. You know, if you kill the animal, like that's why the Torah, prescribes shechita, because shechita means that the animal dies instantaneously. That's not an issue of tsar balichayim. Now, I'm not sure if every hunter, you know, kills the animal instantaneously. You know, if you shoot, let's say if you have a bow and arrow, I don't know, the animal probably suffers over a period of time.
Yeah, like, even if it first falls into a hole and it breaks a few legs, you know, it's...
No, it's suffering.
If you hit it in the head, that's
that
the
when you hunt,
right.
The animals may get sun.
But how many hunters do you know that just take an animal and hit it over the head? That's not usually what they do. They throw spears at it. Like, for example, in Spain, they have the bull, and they pierce the bull 1,000 times with this spear. I mean, that's not an instantaneous death.
The game.
And that's a sport? I don't know if that should be okay. Now, in the first case, he says, well, it's litzorech adam, because I have a need to go hunting.
That's a torah.
That, he says, is litzorech.
Look at litzorech. Because I want to hunt.
Because you want to hunt. Ulam, second paragraph, behem sheikh divrei anod. As I said, there's a ratio and a sefer. You have to hold your breath to the sefer. He says, kol zehu mitzad adin. He says that although, strictly speaking, you might make an argument that it's okay.
Who's writing this?
The Nodav Yehuda, three centuries ago. He says, Lo matzinu ish tzayid rak ben Nimrod v'esav. You know, these are not great paradigms for the Jewish people. Nimrod, you should know, is probably the worst Russia that ever lived on this earth. I mean, Hitler's a close second.
Esav
but
killed him.
And he took away his bigdei chamudot. Do you remember that?
So kind of
but in any event, these are the hunters. He says, "V'einze darke bnei Avraham Yitzchak v'Yaakov, ve'ech yamit ish Yisraeli b'yadayim v'alei chayim b'lishum tzorech, rak ligmor chemdat zmano litasek b'tzeita." Interesting language he uses. Chemdat zmano. You know, a person has a tremendous desire to fill his. You know, he's bored in life. You know, he needs these kind of pleasures. You know, and then sports. In order to fill his chemda, And therefore, that's called a tzorech, says the Nodim Yehuda. And therefore, the Ramah, based on this Nodim Yehuda, I mean, the Ramah is before the Nodim Yehuda, but I'm saying, based on this kind of approach, that even if technically you could find a heter for hunting, nevertheless, it's something that's abominable in the Torah's perspective. The Ramah writes, "Yesh lihimanami davar ze sheyesh bo mishum achzariyut," and this should remind us of what we discussed last week. Remember, we discussed sonim atonis yichya, that you shouldn't be taking gifts because sometimes you get into a certain mode of behavior, and it engenders within a person bad midot. So that technically speaking, we said that there's no Easter in accepting gifts, right? Remember, we had the Ramah who said it was Midat HaChassidut. Here also, we have a case of hunting, which according to both the Ramah and later on the Nod B'Yehuda, it's not technically prohibited, but yet it's absolutely unacceptable.
Achzariyut would be a different Easter.
Achzariyut would be a Midara'ah. Like for example, the Torah says, the Halakha B'Drachah, you know, you have to find the right Midot. The Rambam has a whole section called Hilchot Deot, which really means Hilchot Midot. And chapter after chapter of how we can imitate the Midot of Hashem. Hashem doesn't kill animals just for sport. That's not a divine endeavor. You know, that's for people who have Chemdat Hazman L'Taseik B'Sport, B'Tzeida.
Wait, but if there is some reason, like it's a dangerous animal?
Yeah.
Not even that this particular animal is particularly dangerous, but right there is countries that will say they'll have a bounty on lions.
Right.
That they just want lions in general in the surrounding area. Right. Then you kill a lion, you bring it.
But then
in.
You have to be careful, Jonathan, because ultimately the government has to make sure that it maintains the species. Because sometimes you get what's called an endangered species. The hunters love elephants because the elephants have those ivory horns that sell for who knows a meal they're coming.
The Galapagos Islands. That these turtles, these are very famous turtles, that Darwin's turtles, and they're
right.
Very, that's why they go to the island. And there were some goats that got onto the island. The goats reproduced like crazy, and they were killing all the vegetation
right.
That was supporting the turtles. So they had a campaign to hunt down and kill all the goats. We're talking about like 2 or 3 million goats.
Wow.
They ran around with helicopters and shot them all. And then put GPS tracking in goats to find that it was a 10-year project to kill 1 million goats, and they did it. But and now all the turtles actually came back to life, and all the forests regrew.
Okay, I would say, Jonathan, that's not what he's talking about. You know, he's talking about a guy who's just thirsty for hunting. You know,
no, you can't do tzar b'chayim for other animals. If it would be tzar for people, the people were not food because of it.
Now the Ramah throws in another variable here. Sometimes hunting is dangerous. When I say dangerous, I don't mean that you're going to die immediately. You know, it's not like you know, trying to tightrope over the Niagara Falls. It's not that dangerous, but there is an element of danger in hunting.
Depends what you're hunting. If you're hunting bears, then yeah,
another hunter could shoot you. It happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
another hunter mistakes you for an animal because you move.
So he says that even if I tell you that technically hunting might not be a violation of Tzar Bali Chaim for whatever reason, but you still have another Isur of Ushmarta Miodet et Nafshotechem. And therefore he writes, Misha Tzarich L'Taseik B'Tzayid L'Tzarch Michyato, if the only way he could make his parnos, again, there are people who fit this category, not you and I, hopefully we have a job at Glide, or, well, I don't have a job here, but I get some peas, but but nevertheless, there is a, hopefully I get greater schar in the world to come, but whatever it is, he says that L'Tzarch Parnasa might be right, but Misha ain't lo tzarech b'kach. There's no pressing need for parnos, and he goes for pleasure in sport. Over al tzivui shekatuv u'shmartim yod nafshatech. V'lachem, here's his final conclusion. Yesh b'davar ze midagnu meguna d'ayinu atzariyut v'gam isura v'sakanta v'gam haskarat avanotav. Interesting that when a person goes hunting because he's imitating some of the bad guys up there, like the Esavs and the Nimrods. Is all of a sudden the Beit Din Shalmal, they start judging, you know, they open his books and they start revisiting his sins and his iniquities. Lachain Hashomeali says the Nod of Yehuda at the end of the Tshuva, if you want to listen to good sage advice, Yishkon betach hashkeit v'shanan v'veitov lo yabed zman. Don't waste your time with this thing. Stay home and, you know,
learn Torah.
I was going to say watch the news, but that's probably as as dangerous these days as now. Again, we don't have too much time, so I'm just going to throw in the rest of the, you know, just give you a little taste of the rest of the article. Number one, he says that killing animals or causing animals to suffer, generally speaking, doesn't apply to very, very small creatures. So you're allowed to kill, you know, mazikim and yitushim and stuff like that, and you don't have to worry about it. However, he says that once the animal gets a little bit larger in size, even like something like mice or rats, you know, because, you know, we have these cages and different things that, he says that he thinks is an iser of tzar bali chayim. And if you want to take a look at that, you'll see the top left column on page 3, where he quotes the tshuva from the Yavetz. The Yavetz was Rav Yaakov Emden. Again, I'm just giving you the tip of the iceberg. But the main tshuva that he quotes here is from the Igros Moshe of Rav Moshe Feinstein. And Rav Moshe Feinstein says that with regard to mazikim, you know, things that could damage you, he says that based on the Gemara Bava Metzia, it would seem that it's okay. And the Gemara there talks about chuldot, which I think are weasels or something. What do you call it in English?
Rats.
Okay, rats. Some sort of a rodent.
No, rats. I had them.
And he says the following, that even with regard to these kinds of animals, he says, lo kol achuldot shavot. This is the paragraph that starts, al kach mitaretz or feinstein. He says that sometimes you find chuldot that lo mazikot. Okay. He says, in such a case, you don't have to torture them. But he says, the Gemara itself is not allowing you this permissibility unless it's a mazik. If it's not a mazik, then he says it comes under the pasuk v'rachmav al kol masav, which we say every day in Ashrei. Where does he get the, in other words, why does he apply that pasuk in this context? That's based on the story that the Gemara tells about Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi suffered tremendously for a long period of his life. And why? Because again, I don't know how to take this Gemara literally or symbolically, but an animal was about to be slaughtered, an eagle, and the animal started grabbing on to the beged, to the cloak of Rebbe, and crying. And apparently the animal understood that it was about to be slaughtered. Amalo Rebbe, so Rebbe responded to the animal, lech, like buzz off, go get slaughtered, ki lekach notzarta, that's why you were created. And as a result, the Gemara tells us that Rebbe suffered tremendously Yisurim for years and years of his life. And he only rectified it when he, years later, when he saw that the Misharetet was sweeping the ground and she was killing Chuldot. And Rebbe said, V'rachma v'al kol masav, I don't want you to touch the Chuldot. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says, you see from this, that Rebbe extended his rachamim, his compassion, even to protect chuldot, which classically in the Gemara called mazikim. So Rav Moshe Feinstein says that v'rachma v'al kol masav means a chulda she'ena mazika. Okay, I don't know.
Maybe he didn't have little kids. They're very dangerous for babies.
So whatever it is, the situation was such that it wasn't at all dangerous in any sense, and therefore v'rachma v'al kol masav. Then he has a section here about what I would call, I know you're familiar with the term euthanasia? Mm-hmm. You know, this mercy killing is mean when you put a person out of his pain. And he wants to know, would it be a violation of Tzar Bali Chaim to put an animal out of its pain? And that's a long discussion here, which goes from page 3 through most of page 4. And based on the Chazon Ish, he more or less comes to the conclusion that certainly in the case of smaller animals, like for example, I'm not exactly sure of all the details, but he sees a fly that's a bit like, how do you say in English, mefarper, you know, it's
fluttering
its wings, and it's about to die, and he says you're allowed to kill it in order to prevent it from suffering more.
But for a fly, we said there is no tzar bali chayim at all, even if it's not.
Well, if it's a mazik, but I guess in this case it's not a potential mazik, and he's matir it only because you're saving it and sparing it from worse suffering. Okay, there's a lot more here, but I think we ran out of time, so we'll stop here. And I think it's a very fascinating topic that has so many different applications and dimensions. But your question about Lo Tachsom, that's that I have to get back to that.
Did you eat something when I was there?
Okay, finished by that.
But you were eating something when I was eating something. You were eating something when I was eating. Two people.
I actually have three snifim here. One sar mu'at.
Yeah.
The other would be al yidei goy, and the third would be that you have some sort of tzorach. Even if it's a,
which is I think the main.
That's the main tzorach. But the question is, what's litzorach? Hunting is litzorach. So we said that according to some poskim, hunting is considered litzorach. But the shol u'meishiv. Yeah, that's I, we didn't get a chance to do the Sholem Meshiv. He writes, based on the Sefer Chinuch, that gam b'mita shayach isur tzar balechayim. There's no such thing as saying that because you are killing the animal, it's not tzar balechayim, which is one of the svaros for those who are mekil with regard to hunting. He says ki kach masbir et inyana shel mitzvah shchita, that shchita was given as a mitzvah in order to limit the suffering in the animal. Lema'et b'tzar shel balechayim. So he says that proves that there is tzar yuchayim even when you're killing the animal. You have to do it in a way that, so to speak, is most
at least as possible.
Right, most humane or the least America, according to the least suffering.
That there are pigs that are pregnant pigs are very aggressive. And they keep them in these tiny pens so that they can't fight with other pigs, that they can't turn left or right, they can't move back or forth, they're just stuck there. And there was a law passed in New Jersey that they can't keep them in these pens. Now, it's not that they couldn't let them out, it would just
make it a bigger,
more of a pain for them, like for the farmers. It's easier just to keep them penned up.
These days, the whole farm business is a big
Let's summarize that as far as killing insects are concerned, there are two svaras to be matir. One is things like yitushim and jukim and all those things. It's litzorach adam because you're preventing yourself from the hafra'ah, the nuisance and the hezek of these insects. And secondly, Rav Yaakov Emden claims that the isur tzar balechayim only applies to bnei malacha, to animals that do work for you. But zvuvim, parushim, and shar shkotzim, those are not work animals, and therefore they don't come under the isur of tzar balechayim. The kitzur shulchan aruch, on the other hand, paskins that all creatures come under tzar balechayim without any exception. There's no limitation. And we mentioned before the Igros Moshe of Rav Moshe Feinstein. He was asked about killing mazikin, and he was matir it. But he says that causing a great deal of pain, he calls it yisurei. Sorry, he was asked about the yisurim of Rebbe. Why did Rebbe in the Gemara Bava Metzia Pehei suffer as a result of the fact that he told the eagle to just allow yourself to be slaughtered? And the answer is, says Rav Moshe Feinstein, that the yisurei Rebbe is different than the case of mazikim. If there's an animal that's threatening to damage or to cause pain to man, then Rav Moshe says it's muta. The fact that Rebbe was punished with yisurim is a result of the fact that he told this eagle in a very cruel way, just go to the slaughterhouse. In the case of the chulda, where Rebbe quoted the pasuk v'rachma of al kol masav, that was talking about a chulda she'ena mazekes ve'ena mafres. You didn't have to sweep them away. You didn't gain anything. So therefore, Rebbe says, Rachma Val Kol Masav, told the Misharetis to be very, very careful. However, in a case of a chulda mazika, then for sure there's no Isur Tzar Bali Chayim. So we have to determine whether these animals are really called mazikin or not. Now, it could be that the situation of Rebbe with the Misharetet, with the Shivcha, that she was sweeping out these chuldos, that's not a Tzar Bal Chayim issue. It could be that there was a tzorech to do this, and to protect oneself from the nuisance of these chuldos, and therefore it would not be a violation of Tzar Bal Chayim. Rebbe exhibited a Midas Chasidus, and that is that he told her not to sweep. And why is that a Midas Chasidus? Because in the case of chuldos, there is some sort of element of discomfiture. And therefore, technically, according to the law, just like we said, there's no Tzar Bal Chayim by Mazikin, it wouldn't apply here to the Chuldos. The Rebbe wanted to go a step further with Amidas Chasidus, because this Chuld is not such a terrible Mazik. Maybe it's not nice, you know, it's not fun to have them around. But it's not like a real Mazik, like certain insects that could, if they bite you, you know, you could come down with a disease. That for sure would not apply the principle of Rachma Val Kol Masov. But in the case of chuldos, which is, on the one hand, it's not comfortable to have them around, but on the other hand, they're not in a positive, dangerous sense in any way, mazikim, that's where Rebbe said Varachmav Al Kol Masov. It's interesting that at the end of the tshuva, Rav Moshe says that when we kill mazikim, it's preferable to kill them in an indirect way, not to kill them with your hands directly. You know, put some sort of trap or some sort of poison. And the reason for that is because of the achzoriut that we spoke about before. You know, when a person kills animals, it engenders within him a certain kind of cruelty. Now, as far as the Chazon Ish is concerned, just to reiterate, there was a case of the Zvuv that was Mefarpel Lomus, and the Chazon Ish said that we should alleviate his pain and put him and give it an instantaneous death. Now, there's another sefer here, which you'll see on the bottom of your page 3, called Tzar Bal Chayim, which is dedicated to this topic that we're covering, and he understood from the Chazon Ish that he's talking about these small creatures like flies, not the bigger creatures like mice and rats and so forth and so on. He says, with regard to the larger pieces, the Chazon Ish would not have advocated killing the animal, even for the greater good of limiting and preventing its suffering, because the act of killing such an animal itself is a cruel kind of act, and we should always avoid that in all cases. He says, "Yeshli manami menu gam b'makom shebiadolim noat tzar balichai." Even though you're trying ultimately to limit the amount of suffering in the animal, nevertheless, don't kill it. Not in a direct sense, because direct killing engenders within a person that cruelty, that midah v'achzorius. The last topic that we should cover here is whether Tzar Bal Chayim applies to a human being. Meaning, obviously, v'ahavta l'reach kamocha, you have to love your neighbor as you love yourself, but does that mean that there's an Iser Tzar Bal Chayim with regard to human beings? The Rashba in Shuva says the Iser Bal Chayim shayach afilu b'bnei adam, not just in animals, but also in human beings. In other words, when you have an obligation to do prika of the animal, to take the burden off the animal's back, that applies to animals, that's Tzar Bal Chayim, but you can extrapolate from that if a man is carrying a very high, heavy burden, then how much more so in the case of a human being is there a mitzvah of prika in order to alleviate the man of his suffering. So that siyua in prikas hamasa is itself avoiding the Easter of Tzar Bal Chayim, and it's a mitzvah of avoiding Easter Tzar Bal Chayim. However, even though the Chazon Ish is maintaining that position, the Radbaz and others hold that there's no chiyuv prika vis-a-vis the man. In other words, but Adam lo amru tsar ha Adam lufishu bal sechel v'lo hayelo liton atzmo yosem in aroy. If a man brought himself into a situation of suffering, he made that decision, that intellectual decision. I don't have to, I don't have to alleviate his suffering under the law of Tzar Bal Chaim. In the case of animals, the animals never get caught in these situations, and if I can alleviate that pain, that's what I have to do. The Radbaz definitely agrees that there's an obligation incumbent upon us to save human beings from any sort of tzar. That comes under, as we said before, the Afilurech Kamoch, but it's not included in this unique mitzvah of Tzar Bal Chaim, which is written in the Parasha Prika Uteina. And finally, to close with the Shut Chavas Yoyer, who writes, Yesh Lahakel Balach HaShonus Mokum Tzar. If a human being is suffering, says the Shut Chavas Yoyer, as Bachrat, he says there are many situations which the halacha bends backwards and is more lenient in order to alleviate his suffering. But he says that principle of the Mokum Tzar we could be Mekel is not based on some sort of Kalvachomer from Tzar Bali Chaim, because the Torah is Makbin on Tzar Bali Chaim. And that is because the animal Nebuch doesn't have das. The animal doesn't have intelligence, and it suffers, and therefore we have to do what we can to alleviate their suffering. But when it comes to Adam, a person has, you know, all the kelim, he has the intellectual kelim, and we apply the principle of v'boilei l'suvei daitid, let him be miyashiv his das, let him accept what Hashem has dished out to him, and we don't have to worry about his tzar. That's within the context of Prika, but as we said before, even the Shut Chavas Yoyer would certainly agree that we have to help a person in his tzar because of the mitzvah v'yavta l'reich kamocha. Well, let's just summarize that whether or not the Isur Tzar Bali Chaim applies to human beings, whether it doesn't, there's no question that the message that's inherent in this mitzvah is V'rachma V'al Kol Ma'asov, and Emirz Hashem, we should dedicate ourselves to this pasuk V'rachma V'al Kol Ma'asov. Kol Merachim Al Abrios, Chazal says, Merachman Olav Min Hashamayim. If we have compassion on other creatures, even on animals, God will have compassion on us. Kein Yiratzon, Amen.